Page Lama Gimel, Perek Vav, Sif Yud Aleph, Eres HaTorah. It's very hard to understand approximately what Rav Kook is saying in this Sif. And I always say this, and I don't need to be repetitious, but it's always B'derech Efshe, what we could take out of it. Limud HaTorah B'Halocha, B'Agada, B'Pilpul Chol Dvar Torah. Learning Torah, whatever area of Torah that is, that a person is learning, Halacha, Agada, Pilpul, Chol Dvar Torah, whatever area of Torah that a person is learning, Machnis es hamor shebechaye hayisraelius besoich nafshenu, infuses the light of Jewish life, bechaye hayisraelius besoich nafshenu, deeper than our souls. Whatever it is that a person is learning. Now, this mo'or shebechaye hayisraelius is a special light of Jewish life, bechaye hayisraelius. Every nation, every people in the world have a certain ma'or. They have a certain light. There's a great darkness by the nations of the world that often covers their light. But there is a light that all the nations have. Each one of the Ummah Sa'alam, each one of the nations of the world has a certain teva, a certain or. I remember I heard years ago when I was younger, I heard from relatives of mine how the Satmar Rebbe used to say that he appreciated that in America there's a certain tmimus. But the Satmar Rebbe said that Americans have a certain friendliness and a certain tmimus. There's a certain mida. Each nation has a certain or a certain mida. Of course, because of all the Helam and the Hester and because of all of the things that we see on the street, it's very confusing to see the or of that nation. But each of the nations has a light, but obviously those are not even tiny, tiny little specks of light when held up to the great fire, the great or of Chaye HaYisraelius. If a person doesn't learn Torah, if a person is not connected to Torah, whatever area of Torah, halacha, God, whatever that is, he could feel a certain sense of Jewish pride. But the ma'or shebechaye hayisraelius is with Torah. Umeya bekirba es hadeyas hanos. And this Limud HaTorah awakens within a Jew as a deos hanoos, opinions, ideas, thoughts that are beautiful, that are not only that they're correct, but they're beautiful. Remember last time we were learning, 2 weeks ago, when we learned Shabbos, that Rav Kook was talking about how an unhealthy soul makes a distinction to say that what shmuzu no, shmuzu ain't no. Ah, this is nice, that's not nice. This part of Torah is beautiful, this is not beautiful. We learned about that. The emphasis is that every drop of Torah, regardless of what area of Torah it's in, infuses into a Jew this light of Chaye HaYisraelius, and it awakens within the person Deos Hanaos, beautiful, beautiful ideas, thoughts, Vahargoshais HaTovais, and good feelings, emotions that are healthy, that are good, Hakmusais Bekirba, that are concealed and hidden within the Jewish soul. When a Jew meets up with Torah, and we've spoken about this many times, that there's no greater way to be makarev a Jew than by learning Torah with him. And it doesn't really make a difference what chelik of Torah. Sometimes a person, I've had this question many times, for instance, when you have chevet that they wanted to, so now they made like a sort of a program to help people, but for instance, the partners in Torah, right? So they have this beautiful program. I think that's from Torah Mitzvah. I don't know who runs it. I think Torah Mitzvah, but yeah? I think so. So this beautiful program, you know, the people, they make a chavrusah for you on the phone. Could be people that are not from somewhere, and you become chavrusahs on the phone. It's beautiful, beautiful. Many of the chavir in the shul have an Isaac in this thing. So until they made this sort of curriculum, which many of the chavir afterwards had tainus about and didn't enjoy learning with the people. But until they started to make some sort of curriculum, everybody feels, I don't know, what am I going to do? I don't know anything. What am I going to teach this person? I'm not a teacher. I'm not a Talmud Chacham. I'm not a Talmidah Chachama. I'm nobody. What am I going to do? And this is whatever you learn. You take out the parish and you read a pasuk and you read in the Rashi or you read whatever it is, any part of Torah. Every single part of Torah is filled with that light of Chayei HaYisraelius and awakens and arouses from its slumber the soul of a Jew. What the tzaddik is saying is that inside of a Jew, there are all kinds of deus knows. They're beautiful thoughts, beautiful ideas. You talk to him, he's thinking about crazy stuff. But inside of him, there's good stuff. There are deus knows and hargoshes toivus. And there are good, healthy emotions. Even though when you see him, it doesn't look good with him. But these are kmusas bekirba. And these good ideas and good feelings are waiting to be unleashed by a Dvar Torah, by hearing Torah. It opens up a door for that kamus which is contained and hidden within the soul. It has a hisoyrus. The special character, the special nature of Yisrael. Now he says, this is not only by Jews. On a different level, there's a concept of this in the world. There are good ideas and there are wonderful feelings that exist in the world bechlal. That in the world bechlal. Not only, we don't have a monopoly on love, on friendship, on certain basic good ideas, midas, characteristics, and so on. We're not the only people in the world that have such things. So if Cook says that when he says Kishem Shalom Dem Kailu Shlimudim Kailum the Irim Bekirbeinu Sadeis Vagoshes Shlodim Akloli, there are certain basic human characteristics that a person, by reading something, or by studying something of the world, when a person is studying the Moshul, when a person is studying math, so math is arithmetic math, I know many people don't like that so much, but those people that appreciate it know that it's one of the most remarkable giluyim of Chochmas Hashem in the world. Because math is something which it straightens out the mind. It's a place that's logical, that's clear. And when a person learns, when a person studies, let's say, math, so the study of math has also an effect, a healthy effect upon a person, to be ma'orah within a Jew, a general characteristic of yashrus, of seichel, that's by all mankind. Right? That's by all human beings. It's a healthy, good thing. Something with another subject again, only things that are mutter, that are permitted, of course, that of ma'ira, these limudim akayla mi'irim b'kibbeinu, was hadayas v'agosh, yisodim aklali. There are many things that we share in common with the rest of mankind. And if a person studies about nature and things in the world, is ma'ira a certain sense of appreciation, beauty, and awe that all human beings share. So that's what Rav Kook is saying. Kashem shalimudim kailam me'ir mekebeinu sadeyas v'agoshes oldim aklali. In other words, there are limudim eloikiyim, there are godly subjects that we study. Torah. Whether it's aloha, brother, whatever it is. We're learning that. So that is ma'ayir. That's ma'ayir. Those beautiful thoughts and feelings that are on the teva of Yisrael, that are within the neshama of a Jew. And in the same way that when a person studies something and thinks about good things, it's ma'ira, healthy, universal thoughts and feelings that all mankind shares. But there's a difference. Obviously there's a difference. Omnam. Hatarin is sanish lanuchai. First of all, the study of math, or the study of science, or the study of history is ma'ira, certain good, healthy thoughts and feelings within a person, but it doesn't give him life. It's not chiz. On the matern is sanish lanu chai. Torah is ma'ayre, proper thoughts and feelings. The nations of the world also have thoughts and feelings that are mis'ayre through studying, through thinking, and so on. But om the matern and the son is lamachai. But the Torah gives us life. Hatern and the son is lamachai. There's nothing else like that in the world. On the maternal sense of chaim, leirach chaim leumiim pratiim. Not just the particular, specific life of a Jew, of the Jewish people. Ki im gam chaim kloliim. Rather, life bechlal. Meaning every. Just to try to explain it. It's not clear. Maybe someone else has an idea. Every nation, as I said before, has a certain personality. We know that from the Svar Makadosh and from Chazal. Every nation has a certain personality. In other words, the tchunas, the characteristics that are klal enoishim, that human beings have all over the world. But they vary from one nation to another nation. They're different. And it's understood how each person sees life through the lenses of that nation where he exists, or that culture in which he was raised, right? That's how each person sees life. Family, love, b'chulu b'chulu. These are all universal realities. Despite the fact that they're universal, that they're klal enoishim, because every nation has its own character, its own culture, its own personality, so every nation and the members of those nations understand love, family, work, and so on, understand according to the light and the nature of that particular nation. Every nation has its own mishkafayim, right? Its own glasses, its own lenses. And because of that, each nation, we're talking about the good people, the sincere, genuine, good people of all the nations, of which there are many, many, at best are able to see the inyonim klolium, the universal realities of man's existence, through the mishkafayim, through the lenses, the glasses of that culture, of that nation. On the maternal sense of Chaim, Leirach Chaim l'umim pratim, kim gam Chaim klolium. What's Rav Kook saying? I think what he's saying is that there's something different about Jewish lenses. There's something different about the glasses that we were given. The glasses that we were given to us from Shemayim, from Hashem Yisbarach. And therefore, the Torah is an essential of Chayim. It gives us life. But lo rak Chayim l'umi im pratim. Not only that our glasses enable us to see life and to experience life in the unique, with the unique nature and quality of Am Yisrael. Kim gam Chayim klolim. The entire life of the world, the truth of existence, the truth of the world is entire. Therefore, there's something deeper than the sweetness of that particular flower that's growing in that field. There's something deeper. Like Rabbi Nachman said that how in the tzaddikim that every blade of grass has its own song. And we've spoken a lot over the years about this, that the glasses of the Jewish people allow us to see not only Jewish life, but the tamsis, the essence of existence of all life, as it was revealed to us in the Torah, as it was given to us by Kadosh Baruch Hu. So even that which we share in common with the rest of the world, even the enoshius, the humanness, and the universal truths that we share with all of mankind, are misoirer in a unique way through limud haTorah. So that when a person learns Torah, he has a different grasp, a different sense of family, of love, of trees, of birds, of snow. Someone told me that he was going in the car with a tzaddik. He drove the tzaddik from an HSL to get tzaddik. He was driving him last week, and it was 2 weeks ago, and it was one of the big, I thought that it's been snow like a month ago. It's always snow, something. But he drove him a time of snow. And you know, this is a Yid from Bnei Brak. It doesn't snow in Bnei Brak. Even on a cold day, you know, in Yerushalayim, it doesn't snow in Bnei Brak. And he was so in the spot, like, for the guy that's driving, this is a huge hassle. But for the tzaddik, this was like he was so excited that Shelag, of course, snow is an inin of chesed. It's called Shelag Yalbino. It's an inin of tshuva. It's returning to a sense of pureness. Now, the whole world feels that. There's something very delightful about snow, and many poems have been written about snow. It's one of the favorite subjects of poets, especially poets who are from this part of the country or from the, or even a little bit higher up north, because they're most of the time in the winter snowed in for a couple months, they have nothing to do except write poems, I guess. So there are a lot of poems on the subject of snow. And they share a certain, the hergish is basically a hergish of tahara, of pureness, and innocence, and children, all these images that you have of the snow. Of course, you know, if you follow the snow through, like on the Belt Parkway, 9 days after it came down, it's not so pretty, right? It's not so. But when the snow falls, I remember that many years ago, my sister was in NYU, excuse me, graduate school in NYU, and NYU has a Chasheva library, and I was mishug with books already back then, and there was a certain sefer that I couldn't find where I was uptown. So I went and I called them. My sister found out that they have this sefer in the library. Can you imagine? They had this sefer over there in NYU in the library. So I went downtown to my sister and I went into the library there. I spent a few hours and a blizzard came. It was a big blizzard. So there was no hechatimsa to go. And I stayed that night with my sister. And I had to walk in the morning. There's a young Israel of Fifth Avenue. I think it's not far from it. You walk, it's not far, and I remember getting up. It was like 5:30. I woke up and I looked outside. Now, for those who are, I don't know what it's like now. I haven't been there since then. But Washington Square was a very, very deranged part of very pretty in a picture. But the kind of island that was there was a very, very strange island. The older, it's the same island. Yeah, it's a very strange island. Yeah. So I looked out of the window, and it was like that, like 5 o'clock, 5:30. It was a big snow like that, you know, like one of those foot of snow, big. And it was totally empty. There wasn't a person outside, and it looked like a picture from New England, you know, from, because you have, it's very pretty. And it looked like something from a painting. So I just had such a cheshit to be the first one to go out there. And even though there was a minion, like the minion was like at 6, I don't know, 6:15, but I went out like at 5:30, 20 to 6, to go slowly, to walk the shul. And I felt like such a hisurus about how Hashem Yisbarach made such a thing here in this place, that even a place like Manhattan is really this, and this lower of Manhattan is a place of the in the Baruch Shalom's world that he made, and that the whole world is going to have such a thing that they're going to experience when Mashiach comes, that everything's going to be right again and clean and fixed, and all these people are good people. They're just like all of us. We get all schmutzed and we pick up like on the Bell Parkway after a couple of days, you know, the snow turns black and it gets schmutzig in there, you know. And it's going to be such a tahara of the world, such a hisoros. I remember I had such a hisoros from that experience. By the time shul was over, and it was ready and started to, get busy, and some people trying to get in the buses and whatever was going over, the taxis trying to get out. But for that time at 5:30 in the morning, it was beautiful. So the whole world has such a hisoros of innocence, of pureness. It awakens all kinds of good, healthy, universal thoughts and emotions, period. But Torah, when a Jew learns Torah, be'emes. So when he, like the tzaddik that was going for the ride in the snowstorm, it's not that it's more a general sense of innocence and pureness. It's more a Ramchal, a Sfasemes, a piece of Gemara, a Medrash Chazal. It's Ma'ira, the creation is Yesh Me'ayin, and the Tikkun that's going to be with Mashiach. And it's Ma'ira Tshuva, that I want to come back and to start keeping Shabbos better, and to start putting on my tefillin with more kavanis. V'chul v'chul. So that even the general emotions and thoughts that we share in common with all mankind, when you learn Torah, those general feelings and thoughts are infused with the particular soul of Am Yisrael, which is the Tamsis, which is the essence of Tov that exists in all worlds. In other words, when the guy is sitting there writing the poem about innocence and watching the kids play in the snow, someplace, looking outside of his window in New England somewhere. So he's looking and he sees these kids playing around and he's writing about innocence. So we say to him, good, 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 you're onto something. You're right, you're onto something. But Chaval, you don't know that Tzemach Tzedek wrote a whole piece on the Inyan of Shelag, that is the Gematria 333, That means that the Indian of the Moshe HaKadmoni that descends 333 from Shemaim the Shtalslus, from Atzilus, all the way down to Asiya Shabasiya, that there could be a Tahara, and all Olamas, and what Shelig is. And you tell that to the guy, and he says, I know what you're talking about. I'm just trying to write a poem. And he's saying, you're doing a good job. You're writing about innocence. But my friend, you don't know what innocence is. You're onto something. You're onto something. So to you, innocence is how it was like back, you know, in 1909 on the ranch, and grandma was cooking up some stew, and before the world got ugly, and before Times Square and whatever, and all that ugly stuff. So that's what you're thinking about. You're onto something. Kol hakavod. And that's ma'ira, when you read that poem, it's ma'ira something within a healthy, normal person. It's ma'ira, good feelings. But Torah isn't just the truth of the particular lenses through which the Jewish people see the world. It's the absolute inner truth of all existence. The absolute truth, 1 second, of all existence. That's what... Omnam ha-Torah nesenes lanu chayim. Lo'rach chayim lu'umim prati. The Torah gives life not only our own particular specific life, as Jews. I have a different way of looking at a snow. I have a different way of looking at a butterfly. I have a different way of looking at how my heart beats. And every single thing in life, I have a different way of seeing. And the way that I see it, which is taught to me through the Torah, is the pnimius of the pnimius of what snow is. It's the pnimius of the pnimius of what the leaf is, what the butterfly is. And the whole world has a certain way of seeing each culture with its own lenses, seeing the snow, seeing the leaf, and seeing the butterfly. And they're onto something. There are good thoughts, feelings that are out there in the world. But it's not life. The essence of life, the pnimius of life, the definition of what the snowflake is only through Torah. Ki gam chayim klolim. Ki atchuna ha'enoshes, ha'yoyse toiva. The best quality in mankind, the best characteristic, the best quality, the best tchuna. In other words, you have a guy, a wonderful person, a brilliant person, caring, loving, filled with tchunas taivas, filled with good stuff. Hatchuna anoshis hayoyse taiva. We'll take this person as an example of someone who contains within him the finest qualities of a human being. Hatchuna anoshis hayoyse taiva, that finest human being. And the finest tchuna, that finest characteristic or midah. In other words, say, what do you like about this person? So you look at this tchuna. So what's the tchuna? Let's say you see somebody that's a humble person. It's beautiful. Humility is one of the finest qualities that a person can have, if not the finest. And you see this tchuna by a person in the world, and you appreciate it, and you should. And that person should be appreciated for having such a beautiful tchuna, a beautiful midah. But of course, tchuna ha'anoishis ha'yoyse toiva, that finest tchuna, that finest quality or characteristic that you see in the world, that you see by another person, by someone who's not Jewish, you see such a tchuna. And you treasure that as a wonderful midah, as a wonderful tchuna, and as you should. But ki atchun ha'anoishis ha'yoyis ha'tev tagia lonu v'tzur ha'yoyis ha'mesukanes. See, as wonderful as that individual is, as wonderful as that Gentile is, and as admired as he should be for his beautiful quality. When that tchuna of anava of humility, v'nat chuna. Makes it way into the life of a Jew with limunat Torah, with kiyum hamitzvos. Hatchuna anoshes hayoset of tagil lona b'tzura hayosim sukanes. It comes in such a way, it's mesoyer in a yid through Torah, through limunat Torah, in a way that's hayosim sukanes on a totally different level. Hayosim Mesukanis, in its highest, most repaired state. Hayosim is the most perfect, most perfected state. Because the Torah is, the Torah is It's Takal Chibucha Baraisu Bara Alma. The Midah of Anova is a Midah of Kivyachal of Hashem is Bar. And the world was created through the Torah. Through the Torah's Maisha was the Anov Mikol Adam Al Pnei Adam. And therefore the perfected trait of Anivas is only that which is seen through the lenses of the Jewish people. Not in any way to take away from the, again, from the universal characteristics that are out there, that are in the world, that are good, as I've been saying over and over, that need to be admired and respected, especially now more than ever, when you see a person who's a decent human being, that such a person needs to be respected. U'b'chol zos, So why do I have to, you know what, I don't have to study the ways of Rav Moshe Feinstein. There are other humble people that are in the world. So Lahavdil Alfalfa Havdolas, and I'm not, really should go run down quickly to mix and come back up. But you have, so they say that the what's the name, the Mother Teresa, Teresa, I'm not saying that, she was as I, Balas Midas Tavis. She spent her whole life doing this and doing that, and you look, generous, caring person. That certainly is not something that should be taken away. Although I read something in an article about, but it wasn't so posh with her. But let's say it looked, she certainly had many admirable things about her, about how she conducted her life in a very selfless way. She didn't seem to take for herself. That tchuna, which is an admirable tchuna of humility, or let's say of kindness that was in that woman, is something that should be appreciated. If a person thinks that, no, so you have Rav Moshe and Lahavdil, and you have that galachta, and to say, no, so an afkimina, if I study Rav Moshe, or if I study that person, they both are kind and humble people. This is the way that most people think, and many even Jews who call themselves Orthodox don't get. What Rav Kook is saying is, the best quality, that the best character, that's a universal trait that all mankind aspire to reach. When it comes to us through Torah, when it comes arucha b'matbeah, you say in the Yiddish eifen, when it comes in its Jewish form, in its Torah form. It's not the same innocence that the poet saw in the snow, of the kids playing in the snow. As wonderful as that is. Because the tamsis, the essence of all toiv, is Torah. It's kudshubichu yisrael v'araisu. And v'zeh nimtza aydei shkidas ha-Torah. One can only attain that, like Rav Moshe, through Shkedas HaTorah. Shkedas HaTorah. Harving over Torah. Pnimius. Learning. And in a deep way. Because then that same Midah, that's a Midah Torah of the world, when it's, and again, and that each nation interprets and experiences that Torah according to its own lenses. the universal lens, the objective measure of what's good, what's bad, what's right, what's wrong, what's holy, what's unholy. That's through the lenses of Teres Yisrael. So there are many, many causes in the world. People think it's a good cause. Look right now what's going on in Egypt. There's such an Indian. This has to do with what Yidden were doing there before we left. Which I don't know if there's time. I'm not going to talk about that now. Maybe some other time soon. We'll see what's going to be over there. There's a lot going on in Mitzrayim. There's a lot going on over there. And there's a historius of a Davar Tov. There's a historius of something good. Sof kol sof, there are people who are suffering from the oppression that was part of that regime. And there's a historius, a rotzen, that's starting to, it began, I guess, a little bit in Tunisia, and it's starting to spread. I don't know where this is going to go. This is not observatory for Klai Yisrael, Kiyadua. On many, many levels, it's very frightening for us. Not because of the good people. If the good people would take over the regime in Egypt, it would be good. The peace would be kept, even in a better way. And life would be better for the Hamayin Am, the dangerous fanatic Muslims would be thrown, put into jail, or kicked out. And there would be a big tahara of the entire country. There's a service of Taif. What's tragic and unfortunate is that we all know that the Rishayim are going to take advantage of the service of Taif that's taking place right now. The Rishayim will take advantage of it. Because the Rishayim are stronger than the nice people. And the Rishayim will take advantage. Chalila. But this iris for freedom, this iris to have a better life and to be free, it's a gewaltige trait. It's something that is inspiring. We have to be careful because for Jews it's better than Mubarak would stay in office, you understand. It's a davar pashut like that. But this iris is a davar toiv. And if it could stay with the toivim, with the good people, it would be a tremendous tikkun for millions and millions of people. It would be a tremendous tikkun, which could end up being a tikkun for the whole Yishmael. There's such potential right now, because in Mitzrayim you have 80 million people, and they have the most chashuva army from the whole Arab world, and they have also the most chashuva population. In terms of people who are somewhat educated from the whole Arab world, so it's such a shas kosher in the world, in that world. There's such a hisayrus of tayv in the world, but because the hisayrus of tayv, because that hisayrus takes place through the lenses, or it's seen through the lenses of that mixed population of good people and terribly evil people. So what will become of the Hisayrus is hard to say. It can cause terrible, terrible churban to Egypt, and it can cause a churban to the whole world, Khalil. We need to daven a lot that this should be. It's not something like when you hear that there's something going on in some, you know, somewhere in the Caribbean. Stop. All right, that's also, human beings are affected. This is sitting next to Eretz Yisrael. Mitzrayim. The Chlal. And now they came in already, they already came back in there. The Israelis let them in to Sinai. Something like 1,000 soldiers. But there's a much deeper thing that's going on in the world right now. The Inyan of Yishmael. The Sug Yishmael is going through a certain biur right now. Mamish right now. There's a biur of Yishmael. And whether the Tzad HaTov can be misgabra on the Tzad HaRa has to do with our tefillahs. We have to daven about it. That there should be, it should be L'Tov. So what will come out? There's a general universal truth that the people of Egypt are seeking to connect to be able to determine their own destiny. Well, b'chol zayis arbayis, we understand that what does it mean if you ask, you stop an Egyptian, you say to him, Rav Achmed, tell me something. Zog me, Rav Achmed. Let's say everything's going to work out great. And it's not, and Mubarak is going to be, because Mubarak, Beinenu, you know, he's a Rasha. But it was just, it worked out good. It was Ashgacha Pratis for him to be these years. Fine. Okay, so let's say Mubarak is going to retire, he'll move to Morocco or something, it'll be fine. And you're going to have not the Muslim Brotherhood and not the Rishayim, you're going to have some good people that are friends with America and that respect the peace treaty with Israel. Okay, good. Yeah, fine, yeah. So then, and you'll have a better economy, right? Because Mubarak was very, very bad, what he was doing to them. Very bad. The corruption was failed. So it's going to be Al-Sad Ha-Yoyset Toiv. Right? So Rav Achmed, tell me now, your dream of a perfected Egypt. What's your dream of a perfected Egypt? And Achmed's a good guy. Educated. He hates fundamentalism. He's a good guy. He's a God-fearing person, but he's not fanatic for them, with those chavre. He's a good guy. So Ahmed, what's the best you can imagine for Mitzrayim? So he'll tell you. He's also honest. And he's a nice guy. And Ahmed will tell you. He say to you, Rabbi, I want to tell you something. First of all, I want you to know that you and I, we're going to be friends. You're invited over here anytime. We're going to sip tea together by the Nile. I'm not going to throw your kid into the water. Nothing. You stay right with it. It'll be fine. And I hope that we'll get an invitation. We'll come visit you in Haifa. We'll come visit you in Eilat. We'll come visit you in Yerushalayim, in Tel Aviv. We'll come visit you. Open borders. Everything in Mechaya. Business. So that's good. You imagine all of those things? Yeah. And tell me, Ahmed, then how are you going to spend? How are you going to spend your Motzei Shabbos? What are you going to do on Friday, your day of rest? And what's your picture of? And what's going to be with you after you die, Ahmed? How do you imagine yourself after you die? So he'll tell you his picture of Toiv, and his picture of Toiv is filled with Ra. You understand? And this is the best. This is the best Egyptian. And he's a good guy. And we can be friends with him. We can get along with him. No one's shooting anybody. Mechai. But Sof Kol Sof, it's not life. His definition of life is an Egyptian life. The best Egyptian life there could be. The best Egyptian life there could be is Shekin. The best life that Mother Teresa, how she conducted her life in the best way, Kol HaKavod, was filled with Shekin. The Tamsis HaToiv of what good is can only be seen through the lenses of Knesset Yisrael, who possess Teres Hashem, which is Teres Chaim, which is the Torah of life, which is therefore Hatchuna ha'noishis ha'yoyis ha'tayv ha'gilona b'tzur ha'yoyis ha'masukanis. Only we have the fully repaired tchuna, character of peace. So Ahmed says he wants peace. We say we want peace. What does it mean when a guy says he wants peace? What does it mean when a Jew says he wants peace? I'm not talking about a Jew. When Rabbi Moshe Feinstein says he wants peace. When your brother Mechaim L'chaim, Rav Yoshev says peace. What does Rav Yoshev mean when he says shalom? And what does the most choshev guy in the world mean when he says he wants peace? And again, we respect that. Kol HaKavod. What does it mean when a guy says he wants peace? So it means he wants to sit tea with you together. He wants to send over students to your university and you'll send over to his university. He wants that we should have, a million man march together, and Jews and Egyptians on the streets of Cairo or Yerushalayim. What does he want? So it's all good stuff, and we like that. That's nice. It's gewaldig. But that's not the same Shalom if you ask Rabbi Yosef, whose name is also Shalom. What does that mean, Shalom? That's Chuna of peace. What does it mean? When you think back on that Fabisme anti-Semite Jimmy Carter, when he used to say the word peace. I remember seeing him on television. Peaceful coexistence. You know, he was even such a, even his pun was such a, an anti-Semitic pun. You know what I'm saying? His pun. You know that there's a lawsuit that was now opened against him for the book that he wrote. Just now. Because it's filled with all kinds of shaker that he wrote about Palestinians and Jews. So when he said with his miserable anti-Semitic southern slur, when he said that he wants that there should be peaceful coexistence, he spoke about peace in the Middle East, and you saw that punim, that his punim standing over there with Lahavdil, Ayid, with Menachem Begin, and you see him over there with Sadat, and you look at his punim. So what did he mean when he said peace? What does it mean, peace? The Tamsis HaTayiv of what peace is only the Torah. That chuna of peacefulness, which for Goy means that he's able to relax and lie on a raft, and it has not only a raft, it's called a raft, you know, a floating thing, and it has also a little hole in it for a drink. That's not a raft. He doesn't have to drive anywhere. So he's able to take a glass of schnapps out with him, and he goes out onto the raft, and he has a little hole, and he puts the schnapps over there, and he doesn't have to worry that someone's going to shoot at him. And he's got plenty of money. So I saw my poetry. I don't remember who this poet is, but I was one of those Chashuva poets. I remember, maybe this goes back much, maybe 35 years ago, there was a poem, I don't remember the name of the author, but there was a poem about a couple, and finally, the kids are married. Not only are the kids married, but the kids are happily married, and they have panasa, and a guy wrote this, a poet, and they have panasa, and he said that they don't have any, all their debts are paid, the tuitions, the debts, everything's paid. They retired, the retirement is now with a lot of money. That means they don't owe anything. Everything's paid, everything's in. And this is what we've dreamed of all our lives, and they now took out a cabin somewhere in Vermont, and it's just the two of them. And then they look at each other and they say, like, now what? Like, so, all of our lives, that's all that we were ever working for. That the kids should be happily married, they should be self-sufficient, all of our debts are paid, we don't have to worry about anything, we're retired, we can afford to go, we got a cabin someplace in Vermont, and here we are. Okay. Shkayach. Ubechal zayis, shim chalei shachachnu. So what? And the poem I remember made me so sad, because of course I was thinking, well, I would hate to end up like that, you know. It was the feeling of the darkness of that poem was like everything is just right. And there was also snow outside the cabin. Seems like it's always snowing in Vermont, even in the summer. So there was snow outside the cabin, and they love each other. It's a nice couple. And so now what? So what's going to be? So what is it? It's not life. Even Chaim Kalalian, even being someplace in a cabin somewhere, even Chaim Kalalian, when it's seen through the lenses of Torah, it's something different. It's something elevated and different. I'm sorry, it's like, A guy's not allowed to learn Torah. It's machlok because it was only Torah Shabbat Peh. It was also Torah Shabbat Sam. Without going to a guy that's Isaac and Torah Chai Misa, when a guy learns Torah, it brings more darkness to the world. It's a very dangerous thing. The other side of the question, that's a better question. The question is if a Jew looks at something that's not Torah, that already is, of course, a complicated question. And there's a difference between how an Adam Gadol, how the Vilna Gaon looked at something, and how the Rambam looked at something, and how people like us look at something. That's already something else. When the Vilna Gaon studied math and studied science, he was studying Torah. He had such glasses. He has everything. Everything to him was an association with Torah. There wasn't anything that wasn't Torah. So that's already a very big question. The whole Indian of secular studies and so on. It's not for now. But as far as a guy learning Torah, is that going to bring any refinement to him? So if we say that a guy is allowed to learn Torah Shebichsav, which there's certainly a strong sheet like that, from Torah Shebichsav. And even does that mean, Torah Shebichsav doesn't mean the King James Bible, you understand? It means art scroll, right? Which is a parish in English that's translated according to the Mahalach of Chazal, to the truth of Torah. Could there be? So we see that the Torah is translated into 70 languages when we came to Eretz Yisrael, right? Torah Shebichsav. So that already, that yes, the answer is, it can. The problem is that they're not learning Torah Hashem, they're not learning Torah Moshe. So the Muslims are doing their thing with the Torah, and the Christians did their thing with the Torah, and what did that bring to us? The most dangerous Muslims and Christians in the world are the ones who study Torah. Right? I'm not afraid of a guy that follows the Yankees or the Jets or anything like that. They don't scare me. I mean, I wouldn't want to be in the parking lot on a Sunday with any of these guys before a football game or after a football game, but they don't scare me. But the guys that are studying Bible, they get me nervous, like Jimmy Carter with their Sunday morning Bible classes. They get me very nervous, and they should get us nervous, not because they're studying Torah, because they're studying the Torah through their filthy lenses of cynicism, so and all their shekin and all their avodah zarah. That's how they study Torah. But in a pure sense, in a pure way, if a guy learns Torah's Maisha, according to that Mahalach, certainly it refines the person. That doesn't mean he's able to tap in to Nishmas Yisrael, God forbid. He's not a Jew, and he doesn't have Nishmas Yisrael. So he could be Machni himself and learn with great humility at the feet of Jews and to hear such things. Say them. And if he has a Yiddish neshama, he could be more of that neshama, he could come back to us and to convert. Stam, the worst thing is, my father always is saying that. I told him this a few weeks ago, that when they were writing all these articles and it was coming when Carter was running, how he's a religious and with the Bible, my father says, oh, is this going to be bad with him? Is he going to have a lot of service with this guy, with the Bible? Those are the worst with the Bible. My father remembers in Europe the ones that were with the Bible. The frum goyim in Europe, what they had from them. The ones that were the freie goyim, the ones that weren't religious, they were stam bohemians. But they went to the bar and they beat each other up and they cursed. But the ones that were with the Bible, oh boy, the ones that read the Bible, they're the worst. Otherwise, you have to be most careful from them. Now you have this whole chevah of goyim, that they love Israel. You know what I'm talking about? The evangelical, right? That they're big. They're gonna be very, very nervous too. I'm not saying we shouldn't take money from them. But they get me very nervous. They get me very nervous. They think that we're going to have a tikkun. We need to have a tikkun. I don't mean a tikkun like we had this morning. But we need to have a tikkun somehow. It gets me nervous with them. You have to be very careful with them. In the pnimius, there's something very scary about all of that. Even though there's a tzad toiv, and how much tourism they bring to, you know, in Eretz Yisrael, how much money they spend in Eretz Yisrael, and so on. That's all good. But there's something very scary, the same way that I get nervous about in Europe, the toiv over there. All of a sudden, the big Ahavas Yisrael in Poland and all these places, I don't know what it is, what to make of it. But, Benkach or Benkach, we have to understand that the Torah, even with the universal truths of this world, of all mankind, when it comes to the Torah, it's different. It's altogether different. It's something different. It's something great. It's something high. It's something that's not to be found in the world. We should treasure that and appreciate that and use that for Lamin 20 India.